in March of 1989, you
March
take
21st
the...
March 21st is when he was making the doggy death ray. And the doggy death ray was my wife had some dogs, and we had just planted a... I had just made her a little Japanese garden, and they were digging up the garden. So Bob said, well, let me make a high-pitched tone so that it'll keep the dogs away. And we nicknamed it the doggy death ray. So that whole day, March 21st, we worked on this, or he worked on this little doggy death ray. It was just a little amplifier. And towards the end of the day, he said, they're going to test fly tomorrow. Do you want to go see it? And I said, test fly what? And he said, one of the saucers. And I said, yeah, how can we do it? And he said, there's a back road into Groom Lake, which I knew about because I'd already driven it. He said, we can go down that. I said, we can see it from there. And he said, yeah. And I said, how do you know it's going to be tomorrow night? And he said, it's always on Wednesday night, just at dusk. And I said, great. So the next night, Gene Huff and me and Bob, they showed up at my house because we were going to take my motor home. And Jackie was with us. And we loaded up the motorhome, and I think we left, I think, about maybe 6 o'clock. We drove up Highway 15, got off at 93, went up 93, went through Alamo, turned left on 375, and we're just halfway up that summit when the transmission gave out. And Bob said, hey, you ever think about putting any transmission fluid in this? And I said, I don't think I have. So Gene Huff got out and hitchhiked back down to Alamo, got some transmission fluid, came back, we poured it in, and it worked. And we came up top of the hill. Now it was about it was about 8:30, and we drove down the Groom Lake Road, parked, and got out all our stuff. And at 8:45 is when the light came up. Now it's just a light; you couldn't see it was a saucer. It started jumping around the skies, and I'm trying to set up that 8-inch. Celestron scope, and when I finally get it lined up, the saucer is descending behind the mountains, and I got a good like 15-second look at it as it's descending, and I've described it. It was a disc oriented about 30 degrees to the horizon. It was like flowing. Something was flowing it off in a gold or orange substance, and it was a flying saucer.
You saw this flight of a flying disc, a glowing object. You saw it through a telescope the first time. Second time you videotaped it, right?
No, the second night was the following. That was the following Wednesday, and that was March 29th, and that was the night that, or the day before, I had to go to Minneapolis on a flight with American Trans Air, and. Tuesday night is when I called Bob from my hotel, and I said, what's going on? And he said, we're going fishing tomorrow night. And, you know, meaning they're going to go to Groom Lake. So I missed that night, but that's the night that Jim Taliani went. And that was the night that somebody filmed it and got Jim Taliani on the audio, and that's why he got fired from Tonopah Test Range. The third night was April 6th, the following, you know, the third Wednesday night, and that's the night that me, Jane, Bob, and Jackie and Jackie's sister went. And the motorhome was down for maintenance, so we had to rent a car, and we put all the stuff in the trunk, the Geiger counter and the video camera and everything. And we start driving down this road about 8:30, and we're going further and further. And I said, look, there's no point in going any further. We can't get more than a mile further. Why don't we just stop and set up the camera? So before we got stopped, we saw the lights of a couple of Jeeps in front of us or security vehicles, and you know, we were apprehensive, and so I said, okay, well, let's get out of here. And I was riding right seat, and I told Jackie's sister who was driving, I said, now be careful around the turning around here because we don't want to get caught on this road. So we go whizzing down this road, this dirt road, in the middle of the night, you know, flying dust with the security vehicles chasing us. We get about three-quarters of the way to 375, the paved road, and Bob says, look, stop. They're going to catch us. I can't afford to get caught. Let's stop. I'll get out, and you guys talk with them, and when they leave, I'll get back in. So we stopped. Bob jumped out, ran into the desert, and he took a 9mm with him. I don't know what he was going to do with that. You know, Bob, he was crazy anyway. So I get the start getting the telescope out of the back of the trunk and setting it up when the security vehicle slid to a stop. And so I went up and I threw my hands on the top of their, you know, I made a slamming motion on top of one of the vehicles. And I said, holy smokes, you guys scared us. And they said, why is that? We, and I said, we thought you might be dopers. And it said, no, we aren't dopers. We need to see some ID and get some information. And they got out of their truck. They had the guns, and they kind of circled around us, and they took the information. And they said, you know, we can't kick you off here because this is BLM land, and you have, you know, a right to be here. But we don't want you here. So we'd appreciate it. You save yourselves a lot of trouble if you'll just leave. So they got in their car, turned around, and left. And we're standing there in the desert with the trunk lid open with a light. And Bob comes out of the desert about 10 minutes later. And we all start laughing and joking and talking about flying saucers. And Bob says, yeah, I was over there. I said, I had the one of the security guards' head lined up. If he came towards me, you know, I was going to blow him away. And all this, and all the time, we didn't realize that the security guys didn't go very far. They just went out of our range of seeing and turned around and were filming us and recording what we were saying. So after about 10 minutes of all that, we put the telescope back in the trunk. We all got in the car, and we started to head home. Well, we no sooner got onto the paved portion of the highway when the lights and sirens of the police of the sheriff vehicle came on, and their bullhorn, get out of the car and put your hands on top of the car, and da-da-da-da-da. So we all get out of the car, put our hands on top of the car, and there's me and Gene and Jackie and her sister and Bob. And the guy's name was Doug Lamoureux. Do you remember him?
I sure do.
So Doug says, and at that time, you know, that was when we first met Doug. And just, he was a sweet guy. He was a neat guy. But, of course, we didn't know that. And he was playing Mr. Sheriff. And he says, okay, he says, I got two questions. He said, number one, I want to know where the 9mm is. And number two, I want to know why there's five people in this vehicle now. And when security checked you 15 minutes ago, there was only four people. So it was amazing, George. I mean, for one solid hour, we hemmed and hawed, and nobody said anything. And Doug kept saying, all I have to do is go into town, get a search warrant, come back here, impound your car, and toss you guys in. I need the answer to those two questions. Well, we never answered the question, and 1 hour later, Doug came up to us, and he said, okay, here's the deal. What I've been told, and I don't know why I've been told this, I've been told to let you guys go. Now, I don't want to see you back here again. So he let us go. We got in the car, went on home, and the next morning is the morning that Dennis Mariana called up Bob and said, you know, I don't want you to go to the airport today. I'm going to pick you up and go from there. And that's when he took Bob to Indian Springs, excuse me, which is the head of all security for the test site and the Nellis Range. And that's when they took Bob out, according to Bob, with a gun in his ear, and took him into that little building and said, now, Bob, when we gave you clearance to work on these flying saucers, it didn't mean you were supposed to tell all your friends about them. Now, do you want to work here or not? And Bob says he was noncommittal because he didn't know whether he wanted to work there or not.